What's up, everybody? Nate Lurie back with more of We're the Inspiration. With some dark humor and brutal honesty, we're exploring the absurdity and normalcy of living with disabilities. Stories are told on this show, and everyone's is different. One by one, we're going to tell as many as we can, while bringing you the most entertaining podcast about disabilities you'll ever hear. On this week's show, I have someone that I've been coached by and worked with, someone that I know a lot of people who listen are going to be thrilled that I have on. Mr. Todd Utter, thank you for being this week's inspiration.
Well, Nate, you know, since you've been on, I've listened to almost every podcast you had. And growing up, and I was coaching you, you were always looking forward to doing radio and some kind of talking show. So I wanted to be on it. This is a great opportunity for you, but it's also great for me. And as I mentioned before we started this podcast, you guys were my family. You know, I was learning. I just got out of college and you guys were the first program. I mean, I coached other sports, but you guys were my first family where every weekend was with you guys. It's fun to come back and reminisce a little bit about what an awesome program it was and awesome people that are involved in it. So, you know, thanks for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks for being here. But one of the people that was really excited when I first started this podcast was Evan Braff, who's been on it. And I know that you and Evan are longtime friends. And one of the most exciting things for me in having him comment on the podcast initially was, okay, Evan wants to be on it. Maybe this is my chance to talk to Todd also again. Because, yeah, I know they're friends, but like you said, you consider the Falcons family, and I don't have to explain what the Falcons are because I already did on the show, but you consider us family, and every once in a while we have what I'll call family reunions, and you want to make everyone, and it just doesn't work out because you got a family of your own. So
life, it gets really busy, and, you know, obviously, two boys, and they're in middle school now and high school and with all their things and all the recreation activities that I've coached and coaching at the high school level, just life got really busy. You know, it's great to actually reminisce and think about all the kids now. I went back to the pictures looking at everybody that we coached on of Falcons, and Evan Braff, obviously, you know, was my best man at my wedding. So Evan was truly a friend that I met in college, and you know, we have very similar things. You know, Evan's vision of what the program was like, what he wanted the program to be as a manager, was right in with what I wanted to do. So it's been a great runaround. And just like, you know, Evan, I talk to him maybe once a month, and I talk to a very little bit of kids that I coached in the Falcons. However, I see him on Facebook.
Right.
So that's how I kind of keep tabs. It's kind of like my friends back in New York, my best friends growing up. I'm barely talk to them. As a matter of fact, there's some I haven't talked to since I left New York. So this is going to be a good experience to talk about, because I think the program itself for kids with disabilities was really empowering, enlightening, and also educational in a lot of different ways. The way we set up that program to try to meet the needs of all kids, just to expose them to sports that they can compete at, and not just as a recreation, but be competitive. I did like the philosophy of doing multiple sports. My biggest thing when I first started was exposure. I wanted exposure of every sport. We did lacrosse. We did fitness training. We did, you know, tennis. We did track and field. We did football. We did that football tournament. That was just awesome, where Bennett Blazers came and then DC came and we did that big tournament. And so, you know, we went from exposing you guys to a multiple of sports. And as we got going and as we went on, most of the kids still loved basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so we stayed with that. That's when we went to basketball, kind of almost a year-round program.
I don't know if that's what they do now. I assume that. But I know that's what we were doing before I left the program, because basketball was the one thing that I knew everyone would show up for.
Yeah, track and field was always hard to get everybody there. As much as I felt like it was awesome, some of our trips we took, just even just the regionals, just going up to Fisherville, going down to Fisherville, really, and nationals down in Alabama, going all over with the team to the swimming events that they had there. My favorite to watch, obstacle course, you know, the slalom, the competitive slalom where you got time through the different slaloms.
Oh my gosh. I've got a story about that.
If
you'll indulge me for a minute. And yeah. I might have saved this for when Evan was on the show again, because I think he was there and not you, but I don't remember. With the obstacle course in particular, the ones on the regional level were very easy to qualify for nationals. Right. Like, it would take 30 seconds, but you had like 3 minutes to qualify or something ridiculous like that.
Right.
But then you get to nationals and they were insanely hard. I think I only did it at nationals once for this reason, but it might have been the same year that Evan told the story about me getting screwed out of a gold medal in shot put.
Right.
Which I don't think you were there for. I think it was just him.
I was not. That was a year before me.
Right, because the next year you were there when I won weightlifting.
Yeah.
But basically what happened was in this obstacle course, there was a point, I think near the end, where they had a literal hurdle as part of the obstacle course. And for anybody that can walk, you jump over these hurdles. But people in wheelchairs were expected to kind of go through them. So you would have to go over the lower part. But if you were tall enough, you had to go under the upper part. And I looked around and I saw a lot of younger people doing this, younger than me and smaller than me. And some of them did it fast, some of them didn't. But I kept focusing on that hurdle. And what ended up happening was I hit the back of my neck on the top part of the hurdle. And I was so upset about it that I took my helmet off, because they require you to wear helmets for that kind of right. thing, as well as track. So I took my helmet off and I literally just threw it to the ground, because it upset me so much, just because like I knew I was going to screw that part up.
Yeah, you beat yourself before you got into
right.
it.
Right, right. But yeah. Evan talked a lot about my character when... Yeah. He was on the show. I kept talking about it. And as I was editing his show later, that story came to mind, because that was an example of me just showing no character whatsoever. Like, I didn't mean to present myself in that way, but I thought I could legitimately get hurt if I did that the wrong way.
Right.
And so I was very upset about it.
Yeah. Worried. But that has nothing to do with character. But
No, but I think it appeared that way to him. And he didn't tell that story. I'm telling it on my own. At the same time, even though I'm doing it now, I planned to tell that story when he was back on the show, just because I wonder if he remembers it. With all the stories he told about my character being positive.
Let me talk a little bit about what you brought up. You brought up the statement of fear. And fear is normal. And one of the things that I think that our program... And for kids with disabilities, when we first came to our program, there was always that fear. There's always a fear when something new is challenging. Now the word anxiety comes up, and it does. It builds some, your heart rate gets higher. And one of the things that I think the program does allow you to do is, you know what? Fear and go through it.
Yeah.
And just like, I'll never forget Ms. Brown, when they first came to watch wheelchair basketball, she was really nervous about Robert playing. Joey was flopping on the floor. Stanley fell out of the chair. They got up back up and the chairs are colliding.
I don't remember when this started, but there was a point where I won't call it a joke, but like I started a theory that you weren't really a member of the team until you fell out of your chair.
Right. Now I totally remember that.
Yeah.
That does come up with fear. And like you talked about the hurdle, sometimes just to get over that and try it is the first step in doing it, right? It's just like coming out for the wheelchair basketball team. It's going to be nervous at first and your parents are going to be nervous about it. But once you get out there and you start playing, it became fun. The smiles I used to get when I coached Falcons was just awesome. When I saw the kids accomplish things that they didn't think they would do before, and even to see where they go now is just amazing. And so when we say the fear, it is okay to have fear and failures. Just get back up. And that's pretty much lessons I've learned even coaching the Falcons. I didn't just coach the Falcons. The Falcons coached me. I learned a lot. I was just started teaching adaptive PE. I didn't know much about wheelchair basketball. I mean, I knew a lot about sports, but I had to learn through you guys. And I also learned from understanding like some real mentor coaches. I love watching Jerry and Gwenna Herman. Yeah. Coach. I love going to those programs. Bill, he used to help me all the time out of DC. Green.
Bill Green. Yeah.
You know, they give me ideas. I'd come back. And then Stewart out of Philadelphia, you know, I'd come back with new ideas. It was always fun to learn because I was fearful too. I wanted to make sure I was doing a good job for you guys, getting over that and stepping through. Kind of like when I was coaching the Falcons, I don't know if you knew that, I was coaching the quad rugby team. I started at NRH, driving all the way to Montgomery or University of Maryland for practices there. We just started that team, Potomac Panthers. And then I was doing the adult fitness programs for individuals with disabilities.
I actually did know that you were doing the quad rugby only because, well, I accidentally found this out because I knew one of the people that you coached. And I saw them there one day. Yeah, I met a guy named Kirk Simon.
Yes.
Because he would come to my high school and other high schools and just speak about his own life. And yeah. Kirk and I, we don't talk much either. And I probably should have him on the show, reconnect with him too. Because we talk on Facebook for a few minutes sometimes, but that's it. But we became friends through that because he would do it every year. So for the 4 years I was in high school, we would see each other. And then I forget exactly where it was, other than it was at a point after one of the Falcons practices. I guess the quad rugby was going to be, for that day, practiced in the same venue or maybe a nearby venue. But I happened to see him, and I realized, oh, okay, Todd's coaching quad rugby as well.
I talk about a learning experience. I mean, that also was a learning experience, but they were learning at the same time as adults because most of them were in accidents, and that's how they ended up with their disability.
Right.
So a lot of them are learning the new sport, along with learning about life that's going to be different for them. Trying to mesh the Falcons in that, you know, as far as the learning experience for myself, is really cool. You guys just desire to play and to work hard. I didn't have a problem getting you guys to work hard. So practices itself transferred from somewhat easier to harder. When I learned, you guys learned. And I learned through you guys as well. I think, Nate, you know, I'm going to bring back the character a little bit, but and I'm not taking this up. But it took me a little something. When you say we're the inspiration, and you start talking about that a little bit about how people just say you inspire me and you feel for, you know, no reason at all. The first time that I think that you did inspire me, I'm going to use that word, was the day when I forgot we were going up a hill or something. I forget. You were struggling a little bit. I forget exactly where it was. It might have been right by the track. Mm-hmm. And I went to go push. And, boy, don't ever push me. You were very good about it. You know, I can do this. I got this.
Yeah.
I was even going to push up. I was just going to, you know, help, you know, God, you know, just give you that extra. That shows a lot of, number one, desire to achieve, but also that you had character. And I use that all the time. I still use it in my school. You know, we go back to where parents really, really want to help their kids. Students that I have, some of the students, parents pretty much do a lot for them. They would not do it for you, but they do a lot for these kids. I have a high school kid that the parents would carry, pick up, transfer, and she's able to do it herself. Mm-hmm. So I go from one extreme to the other. One of the things I do bring from the Falcons onto my program now, because I still work with kids with disabilities. I'm just in a school setting. We talk about, you know, independent.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things that we strive to do in Fairfax, the Falcons, how important being independent is and trying to be independent. That was a primary purpose, and Evan was always talking about that. That's why, you know, he talked about bowling. That's why he loved going to the mall and loved these things. Do you remember when Evan took you guys and you had to do the escalator?
Vaguely.
And he was showing you how to do it and hold on and go up, and everybody was saying the elevator's over there, and you guys were going to go up to escalators. Evan brought up that story before, and his biggest thing was making sure we teach everybody to be independent.
Yeah.
Pushing your own chairs, bringing in your own equipment. That went for everybody in the program, right? The program did a lot more too. And for kids with disabilities, it's also the parents. And the Falcons, I think, you know, having that wheelchair basketball team was really good for parents as well. They got to network, share stories, doctors, sharing what doctors where. And that's even when we went to basketball tournaments or track tournaments. My favorite thing ever was the dance socials. The dance socials were by far my favorite thing to watch you guys. You guys would be doing, you know, you'd have everybody lined up in a single file line. You'd probably be in the front. You mostly were in the front. You were the leader. You'd be pulling everybody. Everybody would be hanging on your chair, and you would do the line through. Kids would just dance. It just was, to me, a great experience and to see just how much fun you guys had there. Do you remember those socials?
Yeah, I vaguely remember, you know, being ahead of, I don't know, a tractor line, whatever you want to call it.
But yeah,
I mean, it would make sense that I was, because I was the biggest guy. So
you always were. And then you had Sonia and Stanley. Stanley loved doing that. Christina, Robbie. But those tournaments really brought the teams, not only our team, but like the Bennett Blazers, Air Capitals, and Philadelphia. We brought us all, we got to meet a lot of kids from a lot of different areas, and our families did too.
Yeah.
And our parents got to meet parents from other teams, and it was a great community. It was a great, great experience.
Yeah, I'm still friends with a lot of those people on the other teams as well. And as I got older, I guess I lost touch with some only because like they were still playing and I was coaching.
As I got older, you know, even with the Falcons, life didn't stop, right?
And no.
For the Falcons. You know, I was coaching at that time. I ended up getting married, having other responsibilities. I was a track coach and a football coach. 5 years later, we have a kid. And then next thing you know, another kid. And it's hard to catch up with everybody. But, you know, like this interview, just seeing you again has been a great experience. You see somebody even though you haven't seen them for a while, and it's, you can go right back to talking. That's why I'm really glad you're doing this podcast.
Oh yeah. Especially in times like these, this is about reconnecting as much as anything. It is about getting those stories out there, but just more personally for me, because just about everybody that I've had on the show so far, I talk to them like every week now. And it's crazy. Some of them I hadn't talked to in years.
Well, this is one of the greatest things you've done. I mean, I just think it's so good. I love hearing the stories. And actually, you've interviewed quite a few kids and adults. I mean, now they're adults that I didn't know. The other things I really wanted to touch on, too, was the experiences that we had with the team.
Yeah.
The Paralympic kickoff, the fitness expo down in D.C. You remember that?
I do.
And then they had the pro wheelchair basketball team there practicing. Do you remember them there, too?
I remember I knew some of the players there on that team, and the kids were impressed by that I knew them.
Absolutely. And the other things were, we had Robert, who got Robinson High School. Do you remember we did the expo there, wheelchair basketball expo at the high school at Robinson?
Well, let me stop you right there, because to tell that story, you need to go back a little bit to the expo that I did at mine.
Oh, that's right. Yep. You did. That was before my time, I believe.
No. That was when I was a senior in high school.
That's right. Oh, you did it during school or something.
I don't remember every detail, except that I was given an opportunity at first to have the team just be like a halftime attraction at one of the high school games.
Right.
I refused that because they were only going to give us like 10 minutes. And I didn't I didn't really think we'd even be warmed up in 10 minutes. So I didn't think that was fair. I'm glad I held out, because there was this, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was a bigger thing that we were allowed to be a part of as far as putting together a real game. And I had somebody that went to high school with me that was on Bennett's team. And it was supposed to be Falcons versus Bennett Blazers. Right. He didn't tell Gwenna and Jerry anything about it. And if I'd known that, I would have contacted them myself. It ended up being us versus Air Capital with Bill Green. That at the time was not a team that we beat a lot, and we lost that game. Just in terms of like letting people know that these sports are out there, I was very proud of doing that because I, to this day, remember we got an audience of roughly 600 people.
So, yeah, getting that exposure was really big. We really wanted that exposure. I remember that we invited the news crew down to watch the team. Mm-hmm. And we had a couple other things that we used to do for team exposure to help, you know, with our team funding. We do fundraisers, car washes, things like that. You remember those car washes?
Oh, yeah. I think they still do them.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. Susie and Dave and you yourself, when you guys coached, it was really neat because we started to get some of these younger kids in because of that exposure. Mm-hmm. You know, started really trying to network in Fairfax County and Maryland.
Yeah.
But also we tried to move out and get into Loudoun County and a couple others. I mean, I think we gained some more kids. We probably ended up with, I don't know, maybe 18 with the younger kids.
Maybe.
I can't quite remember the exact number, but it was great because you and Dave worked with the younger kids working on their basic skills. And then Susie also would work with myself. And then the older we got, then when we started wanting to compete at the national level, remember Mr. Brown helped coach?
Yeah.
And so we started getting more people involved. But yeah, exposure was really big and trying to get more players out. That was the other thing. Mm-hmm. Getting players out for the team, but also we felt like it would be a big benefit to them. For kids with disabilities and getting part of a program, not only boosts self-esteem, but also they want to compete. Everybody gets excited when they start playing a sport that's meaningful to them, right? Mm-hmm. So when you have a wheelchair basketball team out there that's competing and traveling and doing these things, that's exciting. When I was coaching you guys and we started traveling to Philadelphia and we're going to Baltimore. I mean, Baltimore was always one you would travel to. I think we started adding in North Carolina, Philadelphia. Well, we started doing scrimmages in DC almost every other weekend. Remember we started doing that?
Oh yeah.
That competition is really what the kids loved and it was fun.
Going back to a little bit about your relationship with Evan, because I may be wrong about this, but when I initially saw you at Falcons practices, I think you were just shadowing Evan for a while, and then all of a sudden you were head coach. I could be wrong about that.
You're not completely off. What ended up happening was I had no idea Evan would even live here. I knew Evan in college, and I met him in the summer before any of us got hired. It was for a senior game. So senior citizens, they have regionals and an Olympics kind of like a national competitions as well in multiple sports, you know, tennis, whatever. And Evan and I ran into each other at this because I was running one of the games and he was doing a game. And so we just started talking and then we became friends. And then our graduate year, we kind of hung out and afterwards we just said goodbye. Mm-hmm. And then I started track at Falls Church and who comes walking down was Evan. And Cisco was with him. And I was like, and we're like, how are you here? So that's how it started. And so he got me involved and he's like, you need to come out and help us out with the team. And I'm like, okay, I'll come. So he's like, why don't you just come watch it? So I mirrored one day and I loved it, obviously. He was looking towards moving up as well. He was overseeing the program. He stayed with me. I think we hung out the first year helping me with through basketball. And then I took over in the spring, everything. And that's kind of how everything went. And so he was still around here and there, but for the most part, he took on a bigger role as far as responsibilities in the county. He had multiple programs he was in charge of. That's how that relationship started. When we moved down here, I didn't know anybody. I moved down from New York. Evan was like, hey, we should get a townhouse. And we had four guys that lived in the townhouse together, and Evan and I basically planned practices together. You know, obviously, we went our separate ways once you get married. And,
right.
But we still talk a lot.
One of the things that I had him talk about on the show, because I didn't really know this, was he had a background in therapeutic recreation, which is how he got started with the team. But you didn't have that. You had a background in coaching, not necessarily coaching people in chairs.
Yeah, my background was adaptive physical education. Okay. So I came from the education field, not recreation. So I went for my physical education degree. And in doing so, we had to take this mandatory class on working with kids with disabilities. And I knew right from that first class, that's what I wanted to do. So that was at Cortland. And so I stayed there and I started to do rec programs as well. So while I was in college, I started doing ARC programs, which is what New York used to have. So we would take people camping, backpacking, go out to the movies. And then I started doing sports with kids with disabilities. But I never did do a whole lot of any kind of wheelchair sports programs. But my background when I first came down here was to work in self-contained classes, working with children with autism or Down syndrome, and not even because of coaching. Coaching was just something that I wanted to do.
Right.
And knew that when I took the Fairfax job, I wasn't coaching at the time. I waited till the spring, and that's how I ran into you guys. And I was coaching football and track at the time at the high school. But my interest in the wheelchair sports program was really cool because I got to coach and I got to work also with kids that would play basketball and football, and I could coach them. And it was really exciting.
Yeah.
And we can work with multiple levels. So I wasn't just with coaching just the high school kids. You know, in wheelchair sports, we had kids of wide range of age groups, right? We had, I think when I first started, Stanley and Christina and those guys were real young, right?
And yeah, Stanley, when he was on, I think he said he started when he was 5.
Yeah, he was young when, if I remember. But the older kids that Evan really coached, the older, he really had a good bonding with the older group. You know, you guys were Brian, you, Gabe Paz. Sophia came in after, right? She was later, but she was older, but she didn't come in with that first group.
No, Sophia was on the team around the time that Eric was, which was later. Yeah.
Later on.
Yeah.
So when I took over, though, it was that older group, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, some of them were already transitioning out. I think like Brian was pretty close. I think I only worked with him for 1 year. Gabe was a couple years.
On an age level, I don't think Brian was out because he was only a couple weeks older than me.
You guys were fun, you know, but you guys were like the start of that program, if I remember correctly. I mean, I came in kind of after Cisco and the other coach, the one that started with Evan. What was his name? Mo?
Cisco and Mo were a package deal. Like, I've heard from Cisco since he left coaching. I have him on Facebook.
Oh, wow.
I haven't heard from Mo since he was part of the team. Well, of course, you listened to Evan's episode, and like we talked about a picture that's still on my bedroom wall to this day. I was looking at it later, and I realized that Cisco is between Evan and Mo in the back of the photo.
Yeah.
And the reason I didn't notice Cisco was in it is because everybody in a wheelchair is in front of them, and Cisco is in the back, and he's as short as the rest of us in wheelchairs and probably shouldn't be in the back, but that's where the coaching staff was, so...
Evan obviously took over when they kind of started phasing themselves out. That's how I ended up getting involved, running to Evan. And since I had the adaptive background and I love coaching, that's why he wanted me to be part of it. And I'm very appreciative of it, actually.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Evan has been a great friend. And I thought he was a fantastic manager. His philosophy of his program, and he reevaluates all the time. And he does ask for and want feedback. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Falcons have done so well. And now, like Evan said, you know, it's great to see where the program is now.
It's amazing how they've progressed. Like, I think toward the end of your coaching tenure, we were going to national tournaments, but like losing every game. I think part of that, it wasn't that we weren't talented. It was just like the other teams seemed to have resources that we didn't at the time. Everybody was in basketball chairs and all that, and they have that now. But on Andy's show, I said that Eric had told me after he kind of took over the coaching once I left, Eric had told me that social media has made getting those resources so much easier.
I believe that. I believe social media also helps with membership. As we talked about before, and you know, we've talked about a bunch of different topics, but one of the things that we had a hard time with, we could find players, but we couldn't get them to practice. Like you were talking about Brian.
Yeah.
You know, remember Justin?
Justin Dolan, yeah.
Dolan, yes. He would come, but every once in a while, he also had transportation issues.
Yep.
But some of the kids that we were trying to get to was out in Manassas and out of Prince William, and transportation was a huge problem for him. And that's pretty much why we couldn't get the numbers up high, as well as we just couldn't get the transportation to some of these kids. I remember specifically when I first started working with you, with everybody, and they were saying that, you know, you were from Maryland. I'm like, he's coming from Maryland to come to the Fairfax Falcons? Like, I didn't comprehend that. Well, it's probably closer for you to come to us than it would be for you to go all the way up to Baltimore, right?
Well, I mean, it really depends on where people live in Maryland, but that was basically the case. Like, Bennett was an established team, and I remember just in terms of going to their tournaments, it would take, without traffic, 45 minutes to get there. And from where we practiced, it would take half that. That was a big factor in my choosing a team that was just starting over a team that was already established. Although at the time, it was more kind of what my parents wanted me to do, or my mother specifically, because my dad didn't really care. But but I was already doing things like weight training anyway, so getting into other sports just kind of seemed like a natural extension. I see it that way now, although at the time, I saw it a different way, only because my mother would sign me up for these really random things without telling me. Like, I did horseback riding for one season and just hated it because, first of all, getting on the horse was a real pain in the butt. But, you know, the smell of those stables didn't appeal to me, stuff like that. So, you know, I wasn't into that. So, and this is a true story. I just thought that going to a team that I knew nothing about was going to be another story like that, just like not enjoying it or whatever. But I gave it a shot. By the end of that first day, I had made friends with Dave.
Right.
So by that alone, I wanted to come back.
Right. Falcons was small. You know, that was the other thing, is when we went to Baltimore the very first time, when I went there, I just remembered looking around and all the resources they had. And Jerry would have done such an amazing job. And they do. They have so many different programs for a variety of kids. And they host everything there. It's swimming. They had swimming pools there. They had courts there.
It's an incredible facility.
Yeah, incredible. And they have tons of programs. And that was one of the things that I saw too, which I thought was really cool, is when we went to those tournaments, they had on the flyers all the new different programs that they offered throughout, you know, that kids could sign up for.
Yeah.
They had a lot of that. But then, you know, you also go to D.C., and Bill Green, he did a really nice job in his program.
Yeah.
You know, as far as he had everything there for the kids, the wheelchairs, he was tough on them. But I'll tell you what, they learned to be independent. And he really, I learned a lot too from him. You know, do you remember when we took the DC kids because we needed to fill some kids in? So we decided to join, go up to Baltimore. Yeah, we ended up in a championship game too.
Here's what I remember about that whole thing. Bill Green, first of all, I like the guy, and I haven't seen him in years, but as a player, I would kind of hear horror stories about Bill Green.
Oh.
And once I became a coach, I understood him more as a person.
Right.
So, and because of the hair and everything like that, he used to call me Wild Man. So, you know, we were friends. But what I remember was the time that we took his players to, I guess, Bennett, it was in part because they banned Bill Green from the Bennett tournament. And it wasn't really fair to his players to not go because of that.
Right. Well, that's totally true. Right. They didn't want to affect the kids. It was more of Bill Green they didn't want at the tournament. They banned him from the tournament. Right. Yeah, so I was picking the kids up at his facility, at the training facility he had, driving them to Baltimore. And then, yeah, I dropped them off at night back there, facility, and the parents would pick them up there. Anyways, that was a great experience for me too. Seeing those programs and how they each had their own facilities. The Falcons were able to do it, and we didn't have necessarily a designated facility other than
James Lee.
James Lee Community Center.
It's still called that, but they've renovated it.
I think that the program has evolved since then, and seeing Eric where he is now and his Lisa, where they've taken the program and the other coaches, and Dave, I think, is Dave still with them, helping them out?
As far as I know, yeah.
Yeah. So it's great. Mark puts a lot of posts on and gives us updates on where the team is, and actually throws videos on as well. Mm-hmm. So I watch some of their games through Facebook, actually.
I appreciate those updates from Mark because, and I covered this a little bit on Evan's episode as well, but I kind of felt like I needed to quit because the radio thing was taken off and I just didn't have time for both anymore. And at that point, I understood why you left, because you had your hand in so many coaching opportunities that you kind of had to pick one.
It was definitely the added coaching responsibilities, but you know, I also had a wife at that point.
Right.
I was going back and forth trying to help my wife with the track program. And, you know, when football was happening, I was coaching football, but I had the wheelchair sports on the weekend. And then I had track meets at the same time, and the conflict. And, you know, it was really hard because some of those basketball tournaments we were away, or track meets we were away. And I just remember, number one, I don't know if you ever knew this, but we went to a Messiah College for
in
a track.
Pennsylvania?
In Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
I ended up coming home, and my neighbor couldn't wait, so he cut my grass. And he scalped it. He had it like on one.
Oh, geez.
I ended up with an anxiety attack. I was in the hospital because I couldn't believe that happened. So it was that, and then I had parents that were upset with me at track. And then at wheelchair sports, I really felt like I couldn't contribute much more to the kids, yet they needed more. I felt like at that point it was time for a change, you know, which change is always good, hard, but it's good. You know, for me, the demand at work, you know, because I was teaching at the school I was coaching at, it became greater.
Yeah.
And demand for me to be there and then coach, we started to really compete at that statewide. We were competing for a state title. I had to put my focus on one thing. And like you said, I was at my hand wearing so many hats.
Yeah.
Along with, I lived out in Manassas. So
that's true too.
My drive to the practice was 45 minutes. And then on days that I did the quad rugby, I was driving to University of Maryland, which was about an hour and 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. Or if we went to Montgomery Community College, where our other practice was, that was a while. It took me about an hour. So I was getting home midnight, getting up early. I had to stop that and stop, you know, putting my hands in so many things.
Did we talk about how you started coaching the quad rugby too, or?
The quad rugby, I started doing that. I was coaching the Falcons team, and Evan, he always had his mind running on how else we can assist different programs. And he ran into a physical therapist. I wish I remember her name, because she was really, really good. But she ended up coming out to watch one of our practices. And that's when they approached me about trying to start a team. And we didn't have many members. I think we had maybe 6 guys.
Okay.
One of the guys was coming from Fredericksburg and practicing at University of Maryland. There was a slow start, but they asked me to start doing it. So I started looking into it, researching it, and we did practice for quite some time. We ended up going to a tournament in Philadelphia, and that was a lot of fun. When we were with the Falcons, if we went to watch a national tournament, our jaws would drop on how awesome some of these players are, right?
Yeah.
Same thing. It was like unbelievable what they could do.
You know, one of the things that I have always thought about quad rugby in relation to wheelchair basketball, unless you played it, I don't think people realize that wheelchair basketball is not a full contact sport, although I joke that we make it one anyway, right?
Yeah, we did.
Quad rugby is a full contact sport.
Absolutely. It was fun, and the guys loved it. Very competitive. That movie that came out after I coached, though, Murder Ball. You can watch some of the collisions these guys get into, and you are basically blocking and picking, and you're slamming, trying to get through to get into that goal. And that was a sport that I had to learn too. I didn't know anything about that, you know. And then we went to Philadelphia for that tournament, and we were like, "Wow, when you get into those tournaments and everybody's classified, in those classifications, the rules that go with it and how many points you can have on the court, so forth. Are you familiar with that? They classified based on your injury, where it is and what you have the ability to do?
Somewhat. I know they classify pretty much every disability differently.
Right.
It doesn't always matter. For a disability like spina bifida, which I have, I think it matters more for like individual sports.
Like swimming and stuff.
Yeah.
Quad rugby, they give you a certain amount of points you're allowed to have on the court. So if you can't go over, and I forget the number, it's been a long time since I coached it. So
I think you can't go over a 5 or something. I don't know.
Yeah. So in other words, you can't have all 4 players as your top
classification.
It's a very interesting sport. I love watching it. I love doing it. It's just, you know, having just 6 or 7 players, and some of them couldn't come. You know, they worked and they couldn't come to practice. It was really hard to keep everybody together. I had to let go. I mean, I was driving too far. Mm-hmm. And have 2 people show up for practice. It was really hard.
How long did you do it?
I want to say that we did it long enough to come up with t-shirts, come up with a name, Potomac Panthers. NRH sponsored us. And I know we made it to a tournament. I want to say it was at least a year, maybe a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I couldn't tell you. It might have even been 2 years, not much more than that.
So what is the process of teaching people a sport that you know nothing about, but they've never played either?
Listen, I can act. No. you know, Nate, it's a great question. And reason why I think I really liked it was I can go to the basic fundamentals. If you really grasp what wheelchair sports does for a lot of the kids, whether they're go pro wheelchair basketball or not, the fundamental things that it comes down to is being able to push yourself, right?
Yeah.
Know how to push what direction, know how to switch. We used to do all these fundamental things. So when you think about bunny hops and hipping and trying to get the blocking shot, those were all things we had to learn.
Yeah.
Right. And so when it went to the sports that I didn't know much about, I just had to go to the fundamentals. What do you have to do? You have to pass. You have to be able to catch. You have to be able to push. And how are we going to do it? You know, some people push different than others, right? Some are a little bit faster than others. So I started with the basics and how to move the ball. Then I started looking up just research on the sport itself. That's how I went about it. So each of those skills that I went to, I started to break down how I can improve the actual skill that we're trying to get better at. And that's what I did with wheelchair basketball too. Chair maneuvering came after probably the second year I was coaching, maybe the first or second year, and working on hip mobility, being able to steer your chair without even using your hands, right? You get up and you'd see the kids hip them and then get that shot onto the corner. That stuff all came after I started to observe the game itself. I started with the fundamentals, passing, dribbling, pushing. You know, I do the agilities, left, right, back, forward, right, get you guys. That is basic fundamentals of every sport, getting your fitness level, getting the basic skills. Then I had to learn a little bit more about how to advance everybody. Mm-hmm. And then getting into your finer skills, like we're talking about, the bunny hops, the tip in the chair to try to get the block shots, things like that. Those were all things that came about after we really got done with just the fundamentals of working the fundamentals, but I needed to learn more about the sport. So you've got to research it. Mm. So that's what I did. I had to research it and talk to people, watch people. The basketball tournaments, when we first went up to Bennett,
yeah.
I watched the other coaches and I watched the other players. And I had to take back what I saw, and that's how I started developing those practices and talk. That's what I did with quad rugby. I watched what they needed to do, how to do it, break down those skills so we can get better at as a team. And so the picking and all the – we practiced that, you know, because I knew blocking was going to be part of it. So we had to practice it. I had to see who was going to be able to do it, right? Mm-hmm. Push enough or fast enough, teach everybody how to position themselves. You know, I think in wheelchair basketball, I mean, I think it was the first tournament where I ever heard of. We got to the first tournament that I ever was part of, and Evan was still there. The team was backpicking. I'm like, what do you mean backpicking? Right? So they were taking a defender out. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
famous one was Tyler Bowers. Do you remember Tyler?
Oh, sure.
I forgot who he backpicked, but man, you heard that crash in the middle of the gym and everybody was like, yeah. The thing I wish we did more of, and I think back to it, you were doing it. And I forgot who else, but you did road races.
Yeah. And
I wish we did more with the Falcons with the road racing, because I think that track and field was fun. Stanley enjoyed, you know, there was quite a few kids that did pretty well in track and field. You know, I think I ran in a race that you were in.
I think that's true. I always preferred the road races to the track races because I never really had a decent racing chair as far as staying in my lane all the time. I don't know. Maybe it was on me that I just never really learned how to do it that well. I was more of a field event guy, as you know. But I loved the road races because there were downhill parts, there were uphill parts. Right. And the downhill parts, you could kind of take it easy. But I still did some road races actually in recent years because I haven't been back to the station I work for in almost a year at this point because of COVID. But there was a 5K that they sponsored. And I would choose to do it every year just because I used to do a lot of them. And yeah, they would let me do it. And it was cool. I wish there were more people in wheelchairs doing it. I don't have a racing chair anymore. I just do it in my everyday chair. But
yeah,
I would just get to the point where I would try to beat the time that I had the year before.
There was a couple others that did the road races.
Uh-huh.
Dave and the Derry, I think Derry did a road race.
The only person that I remember that was really into track and might have done it was Susan Katz.
Susan Katz. Yes. And she went to Illinois. Susan was one of the older athletes that we had.
Yeah.
That, yeah, I had, I think I coached with her one season.
Yeah, we might have had her only for a year or two.
Yeah.
Because she was older than me, and I started when I was... I don't know.
That's right, Susan Katz.
Yeah,
that's right. That's a name. Yeah, the road racing was one thing that I wish we got a couple more people involved in, especially during the track season.
Yeah,
right. Instead of just pushing on the track all the time, going and doing a road race on a Saturday would have been fun.
Yeah, the last time I had planned to do one, I think as part of the team, I had a tire pop the night before on the racing chair, so I still did it. But it was a little disappointing just because there was another guy in a wheelchair that he had a racing chair and I didn't. And I know I would have beat him if I had a racing chair. But I got involved in my track team at school because my athletic director approached me about it. And he knew that Susan Katz was on her school's track team.
Oh.
So he asked me, would you be interested in being on ours? I was like, sure. I think Evan came out a couple times, or maybe it was you, or maybe both, to kind of coach me in track during that season. Because the regular high school track coaches knew nothing about me kind of being on that team. And it really seemed like they didn't want me on that team, but they were just kind of humoring me.
I don't know if I would say they didn't want you. I think that they didn't know how to incorporate.
Yeah, they didn't know what to do with me.
Wheelchair, right. And I think that's part of what it is. And it's that whole fear factor we go back to. We got to do it. I think Evan must have had to do it because I was still in school and I was coaching.
Yeah.
So likely he's the one that helped you if you were during a track season. That's the only thing I can think of.
It might have been him. But one more piece of the story. I was just telling this story earlier today because on Facebook, a bunch of my high school colleagues were talking about athletic wear that they still have from high school. And I lettered in track. So I got a letter jacket and everything. But the funniest part of that story is the fact that they gave me a certificate saying that I lettered in girls track.
Oh my God. Yeah.
As soon as I noticed, I approached the person that gave it to me. I was like, why does it say I lettered in girls track? And this was one of the teachers. She said, is there something wrong with being a girl? I'm like, not if you are one. Going back to the classification stuff, another one of the stories that I told on Evan's show, or he told this story, the fact that I got screwed out of a gold medal. I don't know if you ever knew. Well, you probably did because you were there for part of the time. You remember when, I think it was in 2001, Nationals was at Rutgers University. And I think it was, Dave might have been involved too, but it was you, me, and Susan coaching. And we could only all be there at different times in the week. And so I was the first one to show up. So I was there for the classifications, and they basically screwed Eric from the get-go. Because what I was doing with him was he didn't have the balance to throw standing up. And the first thing they did was give him a classification in field events to throw standing up.
Oh, yeah, I vaguely do remember this.
And then they also changed his classification in swimming, which he was good at, but they changed it from a non-kicker to a kicker. And as far as I can remember, he couldn't kick. So they screwed him worse than they screwed me.
And it was weird how it would change. I remember going from one track meet on the weekend and the classification somehow switched on somebody. That's happened to more than one person.
Oh, yeah. Well, it had to, I'm sure.
Let's go back to how do you learn something new. The javelin.
Oh, my God.
Field chair.
Are we going to tell the javelin thing?
I didn't know how to coach that, the javelin. Before we got to field chairs, some of the kids were just throwing out their regular chair. And I had no idea that the back of the javelin couldn't touch the ground when they go on that back. Well, I forget who it was, but the javelin kept hitting the back and they kept fouling it. And I couldn't figure out why.
There's a lot to unpack about coaching the javelin. Because first of all, back in the 90s, there were a lot of accidents that happened in collegiate or high school meets where people would end up with javelins in various body parts. I guess people didn't know how to throw them or were not throwing them carefully. So as far as teaching field events, I was not allowed and never learned myself even how to throw a real javelin. So I would buy these little plastic things that looked like they were like giant rubber arrows, basically. And I was supposed to be able to teach how to throw the javelin that way. It didn't really work out because the whole balance of the javelin is way different.
Right.
Because a real javelin, most of its weight is on one end of it. And on its own, this plastic thing didn't have that balance. So it didn't feel right to throw it, especially if you were going to throw a real javelin at a regional competition or whatever.
Right.
But the one thing that I remember about someone throwing a javelin, a real one, in one of those competitions is that there was a point where Dave was, for some reason, handed the javelin backwards and he was going to throw it that way. And everybody behind him was, like, ducking out of the way.
The release, I remember that was one of the things that once we learned was how to get everybody to release it high so it would go up first before it would come down. Because a lot of us would just throw it flat and it would just land and it wouldn't count.
If it didn't land tip first, it was foul.
It didn't, Yeah, that was a big problem.
So it was really interesting for me as a coach, specifically of field events, to know the rules and not really be able to teach them because I'm not really given the resources to.
Right. In high school, even when I coached track, we didn't throw javelin.
Yeah.
It's in the state of Virginia. So it was very hard to find. You at least had competed in it before you coached. I had none of that. The only thing I could think of at that point was make sure you release it up high so it comes down. That was it.
That's kind of how I would teach the younger kids how to throw a club. Remember that being a field event for the younger ones?
That's right.
Yeah. Full extension of your arm before you release it because then it'll go higher and farther. I'd never done that myself. So that was the greatest explanation I could give for how to do something I'd never done.
Right.
They had things for the younger kids like that and softball throw instead of shot put, which was interesting in itself too, because if you throw a shot put like a ball, you're going to tear your shoulder up.
Right. Yeah, because of the weight.
So you got to push it.
Right. It's a putt. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the reasons that I was able, and you weren't there, but you heard this story on Evan's show, one of the reasons that I was able to do as well as I did, even though I didn't ultimately win in that shot put competition that year, is that I was actually training with a heavier shot put than they gave me at Nationals.
We used to do that for practice, even after. We would try to work with the heavier shot, so when you came to competition, it would feel lighter.
Yeah.
Yeah, get that feeling. As long as you could do it, and it wouldn't hurt you. And you're, right. You had the correct technique. Some kids, when you first start shot, would not do it correctly. And if you really actually had a heavy ball, you could really hurt your shoulder.
Oh, sure. More recently, I've had to be careful just because I don't really throw anymore. But at some point when I was coaching and sort of dabbling with still training myself and that stuff, I bought a 5-kilogram shot put, 11 pounds.
Right.
And I was not going to have anybody else use it except me. It was just one of those things that, okay, I know I got to be careful with this.
Yeah, it'd be hard to push with your shoulder all messed up.
Well, yeah, going back to the fact that I had spinal fusion, I think one of my shoulders got out of whack for a while just because of my spine. In my teens, I had constant shoulder pain, and I was able to tune it out most of the time. But people in wheelchairs, their arms are going to hurt anyway if they're like me and they don't like to be pushed. The way I like to explain it is everything that you do with your arms, I do with mine. Everything you do with your legs, I also do with my arms. So my arms are generally going to be tired at the end of the day. But there is that idea of conservation of muscles. It's a delicate balance because you don't want to do too much, but you still want to have that independence.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of the things that I always worried about when we would do the training for any of the sports. And I had you doing all the pushes. And if you hurt your shoulder, it could hurt how you move around. If I pull my hamstring, getting around is pretty tough.
Yeah.
You know, which has happened before.
To be fair, though, I think that the parents were a lot more concerned with their kids getting injured than the kids themselves.
It's always the truth. As far as injuries go, we were very fortunate where we didn't have a lot of injuries, any of the games or any of the practices.
I never even heard about like serious injuries for anybody else, like on other teams.
Not really. And, you know, we did go pretty hard and we had several practices and we did several trainings that were really hard. Thank God we never had an injury and the kids loved it, but never really thought about it either.
Like know? I would go home after every practice and just take a nap for 2 hours or something. That was my adrenaline shutting down. And by the time I got up again, I was fine. I think I've been very lucky in the sense that I am the one on the team that was working with very heavy weights and other things that could possibly injure someone. But I like to think I was smart about it. Never got injured either, you know?
Right. Think about it. That's with anybody, really. Even kids, like even Connor. My son goes upstairs to lift, and I'm concerned he's going to get hurt, but he's not thinking about getting hurt. He's just lifting, mm-hmm. right? But he's not doing it with a spotter, which he should. And
You need a spotter.
Yeah. There are things that kids are always taking a little bit of risk, right?
Mm-hmm. You got to know your limits for stuff like that.
Right.
And, well, I told this on Alex's podcast. I always go back to the fact that when I won that national title, it was because the guy that I beat had jumped up too much and just couldn't do it. He should have just, you know, gone up like 5-10 pounds and beat me. And he chose not to do that because he wasn't smart about it.
Right. I remember that. I remember you telling that story.
Well, you were there.
When you were in Colorado
No, that was Alabama.
That was Alabama. That's right. I was there. That's right.
Yep.
And was that because he jumped up too high? Or
I can't say, but as I said when I was doing Alex's show, every jump that he made was 35 pounds.
Right.
And he went after me, so he could have beat me by 5 and been done with it. He chose not to. And the only reason that I won is that I weighed less because we tied otherwise.
I know I was there. I know I even watched you, But I was thinking that he was trying to get the record. I think he thought he had beat you already, and he was going for a record.
It's possible that he was trying to get a record, because I distinctly remember they were grooming him for the Paralympics.
Yeah.
Which, you know, nobody ever talked to me about, but I thought it was especially funny that I beat him just because of that fact. Like, everybody right. knew they were grooming him for the Paralympics, and he didn't even win.
I actually think what happened was he had thought he beat you, and he was like, I'm just going to go for a record. Let's put this on there. And didn't realize that you had him if he didn't get this. It's kind of a mistake. Sometimes in competition, people aren't paying attention to the small details.
It's not enough to be strong. It's not enough to be fast. You got to be smart, man.
Yeah,
you
got to be smart. Compete smart. That's right. Yep, absolutely.
Going back to the fundamentals of sports, because you coached both able-bodied athletes and athletes in wheelchairs. And I know football and basketball are vastly different sports, but what do you see as the difference between the fundamentals of coaching able-bodied athletes and people in chairs?
The fundamental difference in coaching students, like my kids from football,
sure.
and kids on my wheelchair basketball, is that what?
Yeah.
What is the fundamental difference? The fundamental difference is actually just how everybody moves, as far as how the game is played, but also how you guys are going to play. So in other words, that fundamental difference would be the chair, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your ability to maneuver and how you're getting down the court, the speed that you're doing it, how you're turning. And we talked about this, but how you're able to manipulate that chair to give you an advantage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Football is the same thing. Fundamentally, what am I working on? I'm working on trying to teach everybody the fundamentals of that sport, right? Put them in the right position. I'm going to train them their agility, footwork, just like in wheelchair basketball. What did I do? A lot of stuff. I'm maneuvering that wheelchair and how to put you in the greatest advantage to be better, right?
Mm-hmm.
The main difference would be that, the mode of how you're actually playing.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, and I've heard this before, it sounds like what you're saying is fundamentally, you have to understand if you're going to play wheelchair sports, that the wheelchair is an extension of your body.
Absolutely. Just like somebody's running, those legs, when you want it to go somewhere, they got to move, right?
Yeah.
You'll see, everybody watches these videos in high school, all these videos on quick feet work for soccer, for football, everybody's developing their legs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to train your legs to move quickly and fast. Same thing with the wheelchair. That is an extension of your body. You've got to be able to train your body, and it's going to be your arms help assisting, but you've got to train yourself to be quick, agile, being able to maneuver that, to put yourself in a good position for any of the sports that you want to play.
Because the wheelchair is what takes you where you want to go.
Right.
Yeah.
You're making it get that way.
Right. Okay, last question. And I kind of rotate the last question between people that are disabled and people that aren't. The one thing I ask the people that aren't, and I didn't realize you had a longer history with this than I found out about tonight, but what is one thing that you got wrong about the disabled community before you were a part of it?
I think that what I got wrong about was a misconception that your whole podcast is about the inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think what I got wrong was that kids with disabilities need help. And to be honest with you, what I've learned after working with all kids, really, able-bodied or not, the desire to be better or the desire to work doesn't necessarily mean they need my help. They just need encouragement. They can do it. A lot of times, like your podcast talked about, we inspire people to think that you need help. You know, obviously, from able-bodied, you think you're doing something kind. They think they're being kind to you. And I know you get agitated with some of that.
It's immediately underestimating people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's what I made the biggest mistake with. And that's why when I ran into the Falcons, that was probably the best thing I ever got, because I never will ever underestimate anybody. As far as my way I teach now, I totally will make, you're doing it yourself. Even everyday things. For example, I had a young lady who could transfer herself. She wouldn't transfer herself.
Okay.
And she became age where she could drive. I finally turned to her and I looked, and she was talking about her drive. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, do you want to drive? I said, you have the ability to transfer yourself into your car. You could buy a car that has a ramp, but do you know how much more that costs? And then I told the parents too, right in front of them. I said, the more you enable, you're not helping her. She can do it, and she knows she can. And you know what? She does it now. And what I've learned the most, never underestimate. And number two is always ask before you do something. With kids with disabilities, I think that the only person that puts limits is themselves sometimes. I think that if you have somebody that encourages, that's where my coaching was. I'd rather try to be encouraging to go a little bit more, do a little bit more. And that's probably the biggest thing that I learned. Never underestimate anybody, whether they have a disability or not. And never set limits.
Well, it sounds like, first of all, you inspired her, which that part of the story in itself means to me that you understand the concept of this podcast. Because, yes, we are called out as disabled people for, like, inspiring people out of thin air. But there are some inspiring things that not only we can do, but can be done for us.
Sure. But I think that the bottom line is, I don't know if I was part of our Fairfax Falcons, if I ever was part of that program, I don't know if I would have had the same outlook. Mm-hmm. I would tell her, listen, look forward. These are the things that you want to do as an adult. You can do it. I don't know if I would have thought about that other than, hey, we can get you a ramp to help you and we can make things a little bit easier for you, right? It's important to show students that I'm working with now. But I also thought it was important to show the Falcons and the kids that I work with what they can do. And, you know, I talk about that slalom as one of my favorite events. And that was because it taught the kids how to maneuver that chair. They had so many different things in there. Pushing up the ramp, spinning around on that dime, getting down, then having that board with 2x4s on it where you had to kind of go over and hip and roll and push. It was challenging, but it taught you how to move. And like you said, you were worried about that one hurdle. But all the other things, some of these other things scared a lot of those kids. And very rarely did you ever watch any of those competitions where they got up that ramp and circled around and nobody was scared.
Right.
Or nervous when they got on top of that.
Right.
And they got over it. I think for me, what I've learned is it's more about challenging to the next step. This different girl who I have now, and I talked to you about her. She's big into sports.
Yeah.
We have a ramp at school where you got to kind of go up into. When I first met her as a freshman, she could not push up that ramp by herself.
Oh, wow.
She now goes up and down that 25 times. She's a hard worker. She used to have kids push her. Guess what happened when she met me? She's not allowed to get pushed in the halls ever. Her health has gotten better. Her self-esteem's gotten better. She does things on her own now. It's great. But, you know, one of the things that I found is that it's the parents sometimes, like me, I'm protective of my kid.
Sure.
And I think that once they see where you can go, they're going to let those kids go. And I think the Falcons, when they first came to practice and they watched these kids falling out of chairs, getting back up, they were a little apprehensive. But once they got part of that program, it was nothing but fun.
I think everybody has a learning curve when it comes to things like wheelchair sports because they're just not known enough about yet. I mean, if you want to use the wheelchair basketball analogy, it's not like regular basketball that everybody has access to if they want to watch it. You have to know where to watch it. But I think the opinions of the parents must have changed over time just because, number one, they realized that their kids were safe. But as their kids sort of became part of the team, the parents realized, okay, this is pretty cool. And it sounds to me as if you in particular are sort of taking what you learned from being involved with the team and passing it on. And not only are you doing that, but you are having past members kind of help you with that sometimes. Absolutely. And I just want to say, if you ever need any help from me in that regard, you got my number now.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, that you say that, the girl I was telling you about, I had Eric come out and he got a chair and got her into a wheelchair, a basketball wheelchair. And she, I mean, her eyes lit up. sports. But she's not doing basketball because of transportation. However, she is the one that's interested in talking about sports. And I thought about you as far as radio goes. You have the experience. She loves sports. And we've been working on that. But I think that having you as a resource would be fantastic. And even if you, during one of the classes, if I had her, it would be really good for her to talk to see somebody successful in radio and how she would go about doing it. You know, you can give her some tips. But the one tip I got from you already without talking is she only watches two sports. Now, she knows everything about those two sports and the players, but she needs to learn more about other sports.
Yes.
And I think that's going to be my next task.
Yeah.
So before I'd have her talk about her team and what players did what, the high score, what did on defense, what are they going to have, who are they playing next, what do they need to do to win the next game?
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to have to start giving her assignments of watching another, whether it's YouTube or not, but watch another sport and try to learn it.
Well, you know, there's a difference between being a commentator at a specific sport and being an analyst of all sports and, you know, someone who can kind of work for ESPN. But like the commentators on the specific sports, a lot of those spots are given to former players. If nothing else, if she doesn't learn about more sports, she's going to have a harder time getting into that field.
Right.
And broadcasting in general, I never discourage anybody from getting into it if they really want to. But especially when you start out, it's one of those situations where you make no money. It's very hard to get into in the first place. But you have to love it. I know a lot of people that dropped out of the field very quickly because they learned what I already knew. It's all I ever wanted to do, and that's why I'm sticking with it. And you asked me before we started, you know, what is my dream? I think I've hit it now where I can go back to like some sort of music that I enjoy playing for people and continuing to do this podcast, because entertaining people in general is very meaningful to me. But doing it this way, in which I can educate them as well, is even more important.
Absolutely. That's awesome. When I said what was your dream job, I was wondering, since I know you got your job coming back to you.
Yeah.
I was wondering, what else is your dream? If you could pick any of the jobs, what would it be? I'm glad to hear that the podcast is one that's going to stick around.
Ideally, I would be making money at this and just DJing on the side, because both are important to me. This is what I'm having the most fun with.
I remember you always wanted to be something with broadcasting or announcing something. I mean, but when we did our football tournament, you were the one doing the microphone.
You had proposed, I think, me being referee or something like that. I was just like, why don't I be a commentator?
You said what you wanted to say, and you didn't just let me push you around. Listen, no, I'm not doing that. Let me be a commentator. I was like, oh, okay.
I wouldn't have anything against being a referee. Like, I don't remember what tournament it was, but I remember there was an all-star game with these little kids, and the proposal was for me to referee and for one of the referees to coach. I don't remember exactly how that came about, but that's what ended up happening.
I think that was in Baltimore.
I don't think it was in Baltimore. I have this visual in my head of what it all looked like. It might have been like Philadelphia or something. But it was not Baltimore.
So let's talk Philadelphia for a minute. Do you remember that tournament? We were going from the 76ers practice facility for one of the games, which was unbelievable. And then we went to the police station. And that police station was that old monument building, right? I forget why they built it, but they built it for the city of Philadelphia. And we were playing.
Are you talking about when the ceiling caved in?
The concrete, yes, mold collapsed. I mean, first of all, if you had built something like that nowadays, that thing would be like $50 million.
Yeah.
The crown molding that was made of concrete crashed down. Thank God none of the parents were underneath the bleachers there or any kids.
We were having a game at that point.
You were playing, weren't you?
It was not when I was a player. It was when I was a coach. It was during halftime of one of our games. So we were just having some sort of halftime meeting or whatever with the whole team. And then all of a sudden I hear this giant crack. And then people were like running for their lives out of the one corner of the room. Games had to be rescheduled because they had to move them. And we had to play half of that game and probably one more. But in telling that story, there's one more thing I wanted to talk to you about. And that was the fact that toward the end of your coaching time with the Falcons, you had Dave and I dress up to coach.
Dress up in collared shirts?
Slacks and button-down shirts and ties.
No.
Yeah. It didn't last long, but yeah, you had us do that.
That wouldn't have been me. During a game, you mean?
During a tournament.
During the tournament games. Oh, okay. I thought you meant at practice.
No.
Khakis and t-shirts. Yes, okay. That was me. I'm sure it was. That was me, because I have pictures of myself on the sidelines with the tie and button-down shirt, too.
Yeah.
And that was mainly because I felt like if we wanted to move up, or I felt like the program wanted to make that next step. If you watch any basketball, not nowadays, but if you watched them back in the 90s, or the coaches in basketball all wore shirt, ties, and khakis.
Right.
In basketball, you still see the coaches, some of the majority of the coaches will wear a tie, button down. That's just kind of like a basketball thing.
That's actually true, yeah.
So I think at that point, I mean, I can't remember specifically. I just felt like if you wanted to make us look more like a basketball program, instead of coming in t-shirts and sweatpants and stuff, I really felt like I wanted to look more professional, and I wanted us to as coaches. And I think that since we were at a tournament, I wanted you guys to look professional and myself. And I think that's why I did that.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it was just making the Falcons look better as a team.
If I were offered that explanation at the time, I would have understood it. But I resisted it only because as people in chairs, for me and Dave to dress that way just takes a long time, right?
Yeah.
So that was my opposition to it. But the retort that I got from you was good luck when you get a job or something like that. And you knew I was trying to be in radio. So I was like, I'm not going to have a dress code at a radio station.
I think, you know, it's funny you bring that up because I don't remember much of it. Now that you bring it up, I think I do remember. And I just, one of the things I think Evan and I, we may have talked about it, is that not only did we want to coach players, but we really felt like we should mentor you and Dave, Susie too, right? We all wanted to. I think Susie even dressed nice. You know, she wore.
Probably, yeah.
I think one of the things that Evan wanted, he wanted to show more of a class group. And I think that he also thought that it would be good. You guys were still young and a lot of professions, maybe not the radio profession. Not that I knew a whole lot, but you go for interviews, things like that. You do want to present yourself as a professional, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of where we were going with that. If I can think back to now that you really rattled me a little bit, I think Evan and I really did talk about it. And I really think that we were talking about, at that point, we wanted to try to go to these qualifying tournaments. And Evan was saying, listen, how do basketball coaches dress when, even if you were on a high school team?
Yeah.
You dressed up, you wore a tie and you dressed. So why would it be any different? And I think that's kind of where that whole started, that program. Why would it be any different? You should still look professional. You should still be on the sidelines and you're still coaching kids. You're doing the same thing. That's kind of where that came from. I guess I wasn't very good communicating the purpose behind it and probably could have done a better job at that for sure.
This was another episode that could have gone a lot longer because Todd and I just kept talking after I stopped recording. But Todd was one of those people that knew exactly what he wanted to talk about when he came on the show. Evan was like that too, and that's why at some point I'm going to let the two of them ask me questions. Now, Evan proposed that be the 100th episode. I'm going to change that to every 25 episodes, only because the 100th episode would be in about 2 years, Every 25 episodes would be every 6 months. So if they're down, so am I. I want to thank Todd for being this week's inspiration, and thank everybody for listening. Links to our Facebook, Twitter, and Discord server are going to be in the description when I put the show up. Until next week, this is Nate Lurie saying, you don't always have to do a lot to inspire others.